And good morning. Welcome to the KRFY Morning Show for this beautiful Wednesday, November 23rd. And I'm your host today, Chris Bessler. My usual co-host, Susie Prez, has got the day off, so it's just me. But we have a heck of a good show for you today, I like to think. Our first guest is Mayor Shelby Ronstadt. We're going to be talking about a lot of the projects that the city has in and has going on. And Shelby's here right now. Say hi, Shelby.
Hi, Chris. Hello, Sandpoint and surrounding areas. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming in, Shelby. The second half of our show is going to be devoted to talking with a couple of the folks with Euryades Village. That's an orphanage in Africa that has been founded and is operated by some Sandpoint folks. And that's going to be interesting as well. They have some things going on. So you'll want to hang out for the whole show, I hope. But first, before we get into today's topics, let's take a look at the weather. And if you haven't looked outside, it's a little bit drizzly, kind of rainy, kind of slushy. And it's going to be that kind of day today. Although that what is falling as rain and slush down here is falling as snow higher up. I live west of town, and it was actually snowing up there. We're a little bit higher elevation. So that's happening up at Schweitzer. That's good news. We're going to have a high chance of rain and snow showers today, clear through the whole day. After 10, it probably will turn to snow on Thanksgiving Day. That's tomorrow. There's going to be snow again. So that's a very seasonal sort of thing to be happening. And Thursday night, snow. Friday, snow. Saturday, it's going to warm up just a little bit. Highs are going to be near 40, so that'll probably be rain. Sunday, rain. So we're going to get a lot of precipitation. It's going to be falling as rain and snow. Pack your gear for that kind of weather if you're going to be outside.
Hopefully the white will be piling up on the mountain.
Hopefully, that's
crossing our fingers for.
Shelby, do you have a snow pass this year? I mean, a ski pass?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I'm glad to say I got one this year on the strength of the predicted La Nina, so hoping for a big snow year up there. Some of the other things going on around town, of course, tomorrow is Thanksgiving, but what's become an annual tradition comes the day after when the Shook Twins, that's sisters Caitlin and Lori, are going to be playing a Giving Thanks That's not Friday. It's Saturday. They're going to be playing their concert at the Panetta Theater, and that is going to be a good one. They're like our local rock stars, literally.
Yeah. folk stars, anyway.
Yes, folk stars, at least. And, of course, the day after Thanksgiving, that's Friday, there's going to be the traditional lighting of the Christmas tree in the town square, so hopefully folks will come out for that.
That's right.
And the last few years, there's been several hundred people that come to that. It's really kind of a heartwarming community event that brings people together. Great. So
it'll be my first one.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, it might be rainy and snowy, so pack some rain gear for that one.
Indeed.
And if we have time at the end of the show, we'll come back and talk about some of the things going on in this town. As usual, there's a lot of things happening in our town. Oh, one thing I should mention, that the Thanksgiving Fishing Derby is going on right now. It's going to go through November 22nd. And they're hauling some big fish out. The leader that I saw as of yesterday was over 18 pounds. It was a big cam. So that's a big fish. And folks that aren't out there fishing may not even be aware, but we have a heck of a fishery here with the Kamloops and the Big Mackinac. And the Thanksgiving Derby has been going on for many, many years. It's a great excuse to get out there and fish. Big prizes as well. And with that, we will get into today's topic. Again, we have with us the Sandpoint Mayor, Shelby Ronstadt. And Shelby, I invited you in because I wanted to get caught up on one particular project that's going on with the city, but as usual, the city's got a ton of projects happening. Let's start with what's happening with the street reversions. That's where we're going to take the streets and turn all the downtown one-way streets to two-way. Going to add a stoplight, and we're going to get the city's going to get back control of its downtown streets that are currently controlled by the state.
That's right. Yeah, and the project's moving along. Actually, all the construction is completed. The one thing that we're waiting on is the actual traffic light that would be at 5th and Church. That's the new light. Other than that, all of the road work is done, save for the painting, the new striping. Given that it's this late in the season, we decided to put that off in collaboration with ITD. The decision was made to put off the striping and the reversion until early in the spring. As you may know, we can't stripe the streets when they're wet and below 50 degrees. So it was a public safety concern if we were to try and push it given the weather. If we start seeing snow on the streets here immediately, I think the feeling from public safety is that people need time to adjust. If we get snow-covered streets, people will just pattern to driving down the one-way streets, and I think there could be a lot of confusion. And so it was decided that the safest route would be to wait till spring, and it also makes sense in terms of logistically to be able to get that paint to stay on the pavement, to wait till probably April we're looking at, and that'll give us a couple months before Lost in the 50s to kind of adjust, and then of course all season next year to kind of get used to the new street. So I think it's going to be a huge improvement for downtown. It's going to improve accessibility, and ultimately it'll set us up for some pedestrian improvements downtown, some landscaping improvements, and we're going to get more street parking out of the deal as well. We'll end up with about net plus 40 parking spaces on the street. So.
And that's because we're going to be able to go to some diagonal parking where we currently have a parallel parking.
That's right. Yeah, along First and Cedar, we currently have parallel parking, and we're going to get a significant amount of diagonal parking, and that adds some extra available space there. So
what kind of feedback have you been getting from downtown businesses or residents about this pending change? Are most people, are they in favor of it? What do you hear?
Yeah, absolutely. As the public is probably aware, we had in my view, a rather exhaustive public involvement process that occurred in 2012. I'm sure many of your listeners remember that and or participated. So through that process, we vetted the idea of whether a two-way reversion would be a good thing for downtown. And I think overwhelmingly the feedback from not just the downtown business community, but from Sandpoint as a whole, was really positive. So that was kind of put into the vision for the future. And here we are 4 years later. We actually just at the last council meeting last Wednesday, we contracted a firm, Century West, and they're going to do the engineering for that design work. So they're going to give us specific designs, not just for First and Cedar. There's also included in that the Farman's Landing property, which is along Sand Creek between the Panada and the pedestrian bridge there. That's a really exciting acquisition for the city. We bought that, early this year, and for a few reasons. One, to be able to manage stormwater. A lot of the stormwater from the east end of downtown, it flows right into Sand Creek there, behind the Gunnings Alley or the Sand Creek Plaza building.
And carrying a lot of pollutants with it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it was essential for us to, in order to be able to manage water quality, we needed to acquire that property and be able to contain and treat that water before it enters Sand Creek there. So what we'll end up seeing there ultimately are some sort of greenscape feature that will kind of blend in with what's going on across Sand Creek there with the green wall on the byway. And that'll allow us to filter that polluted water through the soil before it can enter the water system. So that's great. And in addition to that, it's going to give us a safe multimodal access for pedestrians and bicyclists that are traveling either north and south from the pedestrian bridge to the Panada. Right now, we've got the pedestrian bridge is always really packed throughout the summer. And then our main multimodal route goes down Oak Street in Maine and kind of dumps you off behind the Panda there. Well, it's a really unsafe transition going through that parking lot from the Panda to the pedestrian bridge.
Especially for kids that are small, people backing out of those parking spots, can't even see them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this will, there'll be basically be a path now that comes down.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be a dedicated path, a safe route for bicyclists and pedestrians through that corridor. And so those are some of the amenities that we'll see come out of this project. And that'll be part of part of the scope of work for Century West when they're looking at downtown streets redesign.
Mm-hmm. And let's touch a little bit on what that redesign entails for First Avenue and Cedar Street. I'm sure some of our listeners are familiar with that, but it's a pretty big change in there because we're going to have wider sidewalks, diagonal parking. I think the idea is also to make it so that people will travel slowly down that street.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's a natural consequence of narrower drive lanes. And when you have two-way traffic versus one-way and three lanes, as it is now, it's kind of designed like a raceway. You know, you've got wide lanes, three lanes, all going the same direction. And it's actually particularly unsafe for pedestrians when you may have, say you're driving down the left lane and the drivers to your right ahead of you maybe are stopped for a pedestrian and you can't see the pedestrian behind the vehicle, right? So that's...
And the pedestrian can't see that oncoming traffic because it's blocked by the car in front of them, too. Yeah,
so that's a really dangerous situation, and that's one important motivator for wanting to go to this two-way transition. We really want to create a walkable, pedestrian-friendly downtown environment. And so when we have two-way traffic, narrower lanes, you've got more dense parking, and of course, just more activity on the sidewalks. Then it has a natural effect of slowing and calming traffic. And yet, at the same time, not only because vehicles are traveling slower, but because they have full visibility of what's happening on the street, it just creates for a much safer pedestrian mm-hmm. environment.
Yeah, I can remember a few years ago when the city made a designated bike route down Oak Street from 5th down to where it becomes Main Street. And it made the travel lanes for the cars narrower. And I can remember hearing a guy in the supermarket or something complaining, now you have to just slow down to almost nothing when you're driving down that street. And my thought was, well, that is actually what you're trying to accomplish with a narrower lane. Drivers automatically go, you don't have to put a sign up that says 20 miles an hour. Because down First Avenue right now, it is a 20 mile an hour speed limit, but there are people that you see going down there 35 all the time.
That's right.
The wide lanes entice them to do that.
Yeah.
So, okay.
You know, and another thing that I'll add that's going to be part of this engineering work is a new sewer main down First Avenue. That's going to be part of the project as well. And that's actually funded through the sewer utility. But I think that'll be an important improvement particularly for businesses and property owners along First Avenue there.
So when's that work likely to start?
We're going to see what we're expecting. We don't have an actual schedule for work as of yet. That's part of the scope of work for the engineering firm that we've recently contracted. So they're going to, of course, start developing that here immediately. And part of that will be a public engagement process. So we're going to really solicit a lot of public feedback, primarily from the downtown business community to really make sure that we're sensitive to the needs and concerns of the downtown community. So, but in terms of scheduling, I would expect that we'll get started as early as the spring. And probably what we'll see first is that corridor from on Cedar from 5th Avenue to 2nd. So that first three blocks there will probably be the first thing we'll see under construction.
And this, and if it entails putting a sewer line down, that means the street's going to be pretty dug up for that.
Well, that'll be a later phase. That'll be on First.
Only on First. Okay.
Yeah. So we'll probably see that. You know, I don't want to project on the air what the timing of that'll be yet, because it's just too.
But it will be coming. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, we're going to try and do this as quickly as possible. and minimize the impact on the downtown as much as possible. And one of the ways that we can do that is we will always maintain one right-of-way in any given street section that's being worked on. If the street's being worked on, we'll maintain right-of-way on the sidewalks. Mm-hmm. If the sidewalks are being worked on, we'll maintain right-of-way on the street. So there will always be some flow.
So the street won't be closed off entirely at any point. Yeah,
that's the intention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Speaking of streets being dug up, last year about this time, we had some dug-up streets for the fiber optic conduit that was being placed. Give us an update on that. What's the status of bringing fiber optic specifically to the downtown?
Yeah, well, it's going really well. We actually just recently, in the last couple of weeks, we've met with a number of providers in the region, including Ting and Fatbeam and others. And we're excited. The city's actually going to get lit up here next week. So we'll be the first ones.
The City Hall.
Yep. City Hall. Mm-hmm. Yep, as well as our facilities, water treatment plant, which is actually the point of presence down across Sand Creek there. And so that's
where we tap into the big cable that's basically a transcontinental internet cable that's coming through town. Most people don't even know about it, probably, but that the point of presence is where Sandpoint can actually access that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, you know, we met with a number of providers in the last couple weeks, and it really helped to kind of inform our process in the future build out and management of the network. We're still working with Design 9, who's providing consulting services for us for the management of this network, and to give us a lot of insight, I think, into how this can be built out in the future. So Ting has been involved. They're looking to really engage the residential market here starting early in 2017. And Fatbeam is partnered with us. Fatbeam is actually who's providing our service
to the City Hall.
Service, oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really happy to partner with them. And they're also going to be providing service for the school district as well. So
these are two different providers. Basically, they're competitors for the average person that wants to sign up?
It's a little different. You know, Ting really focuses on the residential market. And they will serve small business as well, which is a little bit different. Fatbeam provides infrastructure. And they also provide service, but I think they're more focused on the large, you know, the big user, if you will.
Like the school district.
School district, mm-hmm. like the city, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And they would even lease fiber or conduit if available to another provider like Ting, for instance, or Frontier, whoever it may be. Things are moving forward. It's still a little too early to tell, you know, when we can see actual, you know, service hit the homes and the downtown community, but things are looking good. They're moving forward. We expect to have a full report from Design 9, our fiber consulting firm, here in the next several weeks. And all looks well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there a construction component left? I mean, we have the conduit in the ground now. That all took place last year, basically.
Yeah, so phase one is done, and that basically extends service from the water treatment facility across Sand Creek all the way out to the county building on Division. And it swings by and picks up City Hall. So that's what we've been calling phase one. Phase two is going out to bid currently. And that's was in partnership with the county. The county's agreement was to pick up phase two, and that would take the backbone from the county administration building on Division out to the sheriff's office on the north side of town. And then along the way, we're hoping to kind of branch off and, you know, either the city or perhaps in partnership with Fatbeam, we're going to kind of branch off and pick up the airport, the industrial area there, the city shop, out in the industrial area, et cetera. So, and then that would be either part of phase two or something that I think we can definitely accomplish this next year. And then what we had been calling phase three was coming back down on the east side of the airport from Schweitzer Cutoff Road back down Boyer and connecting the loop back into downtown and into the pop across Sand Creek there. So that's all scheduled. It's all the details are still being worked out on that phase three. Who and how and when and those kind of details, but we have high confidence that you know, sooner than later, that's it's going to happen. So,
and I want to remind our listeners that this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. I'm the host, Chris Bessler. I'm speaking this morning with Sandpoint Mayor Shelby Ronstad. We're talking about projects the city has underway. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have a second set of guests in from Urotes Village. So please stay around for that. They have some things going on that are going to be very interesting to talk about. So Mayor Ronstad, other things happening in town. I have a long list here, but I thought I'd is there something you want to let folks know about off the top?
Yeah, sure. Well, one thing that I'm really happy to report, the city just this last Wednesday, we were able to refinance our sewer bond. And that was really big news for ratepayers out there, because we saved over $1 million on our sewer on our bond that we had set to expire on 2027. Not only do we save $1 million, but we're actually able to pay it off 5 years sooner. So we're going to have that paid off in 2022, and that's going to work really well for us being able to finance future build out of our sewer system. We're likely to expect to have to we either have to upgrade our existing wastewater facility, or even look at building an entirely new facility, and the timelines will line up really nice with that early early payoff of that bond. It's going to allow us the opportunity to do that, and it won't impact us financially too much. So,
how far down the road would a new sewer or sewer upgrade be? At more than 5 years, apparently.
Well, yeah, I mean, we would definitely have to address it by 2022. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the options is to actually relocate it. And I understand, as I remember, that the city acquired some property off of Baldy at one point to possibly do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's something that we're looking into right now. And it is a bit of a process. We'll be spending the next couple of years investigating what the best option is for us, whether to relocate out there, build an entirely new facility, possibly regionalize and manage Ponderay and Kootenay's wastewater as well, or whether to basically upgrade our existing facility and just kind of continue as we've been going, but with improved facility out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be a huge project, I'm sure. So tell us what's going on with the construction on the Memorial Field grandstands.
Well, it's going along as on schedule and as it should. Not too much to report there. One thing that I do want to mention is I'm about to create a new committee. It would be a Memorial Field Surface Advisory Committee. So I would invite your listeners out there, if anyone feels inspired by the topic and feels passionately about the surface out there at Memorial Field, we need to populate this committee, and this committee would provide, in an advisory capacity, provide information and to council and to the mayor to help us make the best decision is what kind of turf does Sandpoint want to see there on our field. So, so please, if anyone's interested, and in fact, since I mentioned that, I'll mention that we've got a in fact, every committee that we have, every advisory committee that we have at City Hall right now, they could all use at least one new member. So if anyone would like to participate, get involved with your local government, we could sure use the help. And you would provide an advisory capacity, like I said, to council and mayor. And it's really valuable service to the community. It's not too much of a commitment. Another committee that I'll mention, the parking committee, has yet to be convened. We're still needing at least one member in order to convene that committee. But as I know, a lot of people downtown feel very passionate about the parking issue. And if you want to have an input, more direct input on how our parking resources are managed downtown and how that changes in the future, please join the committee. So any of those committees can be applied for either online through our website.
Cityofsandpoint.com.
Cityofsandpoint.com. Or you can stop in at the clerk's office and fill out an application in person.
You mentioned parking. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's been in the news recently is a parking agreement that the city is making with Kiniksu Health Services, because they're looking to move into the downtown. Can you give us the lowdown on that?
Yeah, so council recently approved an agreement with Kiniksu Health Services just this last Wednesday. And the nuts and bolts of it was, as you mentioned, Kiniksu Health Services, which is currently located out in Ponderay. They have a clinic with 85 clinicians, doctors and nurses out there. Their administration and pediatrics are here downtown currently, but if they move the clinic downtown, it would have a net impact of 70 new jobs. So they're looking at building a 26 to 30,000 square foot new building right downtown on Oak Street, Oak Main, right at that juncture when it switches there, and so part of that required a parking agreement. And so City Council approved an agreement with Kiniksu that granted them the opportunity to lease up to 30 parking spots in the city lot there at 3rd and Oak, and then an additional 30 spots that would be either provided by permit on the streets or at another lot. Or at some other location.
Like perhaps the lots along Fifth Avenue.
That's right. Yeah. The ITD lot, the Santa Creek lot, some other option other than the city lot. Currently, any business owner or anyone can purchase a permit by the month and park anywhere on the city streets, with the exception of the two-hour zones on 1st and 2nd. Mm-hmm. So they would have, of course, that opportunity, which they do anyway. But they could also, in place of that, they could use that permit for one of the other lots, which are also, all these lots, by the way, are currently free all-day parking. So this was a benefit to the city to basically, get a fee for something that we're giving away to everybody else. But for them, it gave them the security that they needed to have the confidence to move into the downtown and know that they'd have adequate parking for their staff and for their customers.
Mm-hmm. And for the downtown, of course, it's a big boon to have that number of people coming into the downtown every day to work, because they will also be eating at restaurants and shopping at the stores and bringing their customers in as well. So it's a magnet for the downtown.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the question is, how do we manage the parking? And that's what this has been about. I think we have time to squeeze in one more project you've been working on before we go to break. Schweitzer Cutoff Road.
Happy to report there, too, that the city's work is essentially done there until the bridge project, which we expect to happen early next year in the spring. So that's great. Anyone who goes out there, you can see the work that's been done, extending, creating more space there for the intersection. Of course, it'll be a roundabout there at Boyer and Schweitzer Cutoff Road. There's a new multimodal path that's on the west side of Boyer there. And so it's a much safer area for bicyclists, pedestrians, and the street is rebuilt and ready for the roundabout that'll come when the bridge project happens next year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just drove on that yesterday. It's quite an advantage, quite an improvement, I would say. So Mayor Ronstadt, we're out of time. We're going to go to a break here in just a second, and then we're bringing in Urati's Village. But any last words to your listening constituency out there?
Well, Chris, it's always a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to speak before all your listeners here. And I hope you all have a beautiful day and a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thank you. And we're going to hear now from the Shook Twins. They're actually playing in town this Saturday in their annual Giving Thanks concert. This is one of their songs, Potter's Daughter. And we'll be back in 2 minutes and 46 seconds. And that was the Shook Twins, who are playing here on Saturday in their annual concert at the Panada, Potter's Daughter. This is the KRFY Morning Show, and I'm your host, Chris Bessler. We're back in the studio. We have two new guests now. We have with us Jennifer Phil Crooks. She's the founder and director of Urati's Village, as well as Sarah Clintworth. She's the outreach coordinator. Jennifer and Sarah, say hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, thank you for coming in. And you have been on the air with us a couple of times previously, but I never assume that our listeners are going to actually know or have heard you the previous time. So can you tell us what Urati's Village is all about?
Urati's Village, we are a nonprofit. We are working in Soto, Ethiopia, working to create a self-sustaining orphan village down in the south. Ethiopia has the highest orphan population of any country in the world, and the South has been really hit hard. And so we're working there, building a village, trying to empower the local people and create self-sustainability instead of foreign dependence through a number of different avenues.
And you already have, the village is going right now.
Yep, we have four houses underway. We have four buildings already on the property, and then Eric Keller, who is a Sandpoint native and rock star builder, is over there, and he has, we hope to have our first four houses complete. We were hoping for December, but looking more like February.
It tends to go that way with construction projects.
Yeah, especially over there. There's no Home Depot to go and buy everything you need in one place, so
yeah,
he's done a lot of really creative persistent work in just trying to get supplies lined up, materials, getting a crew established, all that.
Yeah, he's got a great local crew now, which is really, really neat. That's a strong part of our mission is you know, uplifting the local community, and we have a great crew on the ground now.
And I know the story myself, but I want to hear it again. So how did you get inspired to do Urati's Village?
I have a large family of nine children now through adoption. And four of my children are from Ethiopia. We just brought home another child. And spending time there and seeing the orphan crisis firsthand and seeing, you know, the way people live in Ethiopia, I just felt like I couldn't adopt all the children in the world. And for the children that I couldn't adopt, I needed to do something to try to find a way for them to grow up in a healthy family-like environment. And Urati's Village kind of came from that.
So you have a huge family.
I do.
All these kids.
Yeah.
And they're you said four from Ethiopia, but others are from other parts of the world.
Yeah, I have five from China, a couple of homegrown.
How does a multicultural family, I assume they all just, as they're young, they become, you know, acculturated to our culture.
They do, but some of my children were older when they were adopted. My daughter Millie was 8, and she came from Ethiopia, so she's had to integrate at a slightly older age. But Sandpoint's been great as a community, and yeah, the kids have integrated really well.
Yeah, great. Well, of course, ideally, these kids that are in other countries can stay in their home culture. The standard of living in a place like Ethiopia is far lower than here. There's a lot of poverty. How do you marshal the resources to be in Sandpoint and pursue this dream of helping people there How do you get the support you need?
We fundraise through a number of different avenues. I compete in the horse world. I compete at a high level in the equestrian show jumping sport. So we do a lot of fundraising through the equestrian sport. But we really worked to bring Soto and Sandpoint, Soto's our town in Ethiopia, together. And we've had a lot of amazing support, especially in the last few months, from the Sandpoint community. We have a physical therapist and an occupational therapist and a nurse practitioner, all from Sandpoint, who are coming over to Soto and doing nanny trainings. And then we have some local outreach going on, which I will turn over to Sarah because she's our coordinator.
Well, yeah, we have, you know, largely at this point, because Uradi's Village has existed for 2.5 years now, the support from the horse world has been really crucial. But we are also looking at moving more towards applying for grants. But that's kind of a long process. It takes a while to establish a track record where you can start successfully getting larger grants to keep this kind of a program going. But then, yeah, with the local community, we had an event earlier this year in the springtime at Evans Brothers, and we've got another one coming up. The wonderful people at Pondre Winery actually do this thing called a sip and shop where they will sponsor a nonprofit to come in, and you have kind of like a window of time in the evening, usually from 4 to 7 p.m., where they donate 10% of the proceeds to your nonprofit. And so we are going to be there on November 30th. And I've also arranged to have a great little local band. I don't know if any, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with them, but Meg Turner's band, Still Tipsy and the Hangovers. They're so much fun, and they do fun.
What's the band name again?
It's called Still Tipsy and the Hangovers. It's okay. Great. They're great. They do really fun, like, they're going to be doing kind of jazzy, swingy, happy kind of stuff for us. They're going to be there for some live music. And so if you come in, basically, as someone in the community, if you want to participate, all you have to do is come in and have a glass of wine or buy some food. Do a little shopping in the gift shop, and you'll be supporting your Uradi's Village without having to really, you know, go way out of your way.
And you get something pretty nice back.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you get something for yourself, yeah. And you get to give something back to the kids. And
yeah.
We feel really strongly that the community here in Sandpoint is kind of a perfect community for doing what we do. The people here are, you know, people that are concerned with giving back and being you know, an important part of the world and making things better for everyone. And so it's just something I think that we feel we kind of want to establish a relationship, whether it's, you know, looking at getting donations or whether it's working with our local charter school, where I'm actually in the middle of trying to get kind of a program established to work with the kids and the teachers there. They've been really, really wonderful, and they're very excited about getting involved. And so we feel that it's just as important for us to give something to our local community by sharing what we do. I think most of us are probably aware that when you do something to help other people, it benefits you just as much as it does them. Mm-hmm. And so that's been something that's really important, I think, to both Jennifer and myself, to provide that opportunity for our kids, you know, the Sandpoint kids, to kind of see some other ways that people live their lives, you know. When Jennifer is talking about the orphan crisis, it is, for me personally, I mean, you can say crisis, but when you think about the fact that a large percentage of the children that we already take care of were just literally found, like, in a ditch or in the woods somewhere as infants or newborns.
Abandoned by parents that probably don't have the means to take care of them.
Yeah, don't have the resources.
For all sorts of different reasons. But that happens on almost like a daily basis over there. It's, you know, we certainly, I think every country and every culture, every society has its challenges, and there's definitely what you could call suffering in a lot of different places, but that is pretty extreme. And like Jennifer was saying, the resources are just so limited there that even the newest baby addition to the Crooks family, I mean, he was found literally like shivering and naked in a ditch. And now it's just amazing to be able to step in and make such a profound difference just by being there.
Yeah, profound difference to, for those individual children, particularly. How many kids are now at the orphanage?
34. We're at 34, and then we'll have capacity for 70 as a new facility.
And what's the age range of those kids?
Newborn to 14.
And will they stay there until they're old enough to go out on their own?
Yeah, until they're 18, and then the kids that are accepted to university will pay a housing stipend, and university is free in Ethiopia, so we will support them through university. And if they're not able to get into university, then we'll look for vocational schools for them. And then also permaculture is a big part of what we do, and the principles of permaculture, all of the kids will grow up learning how to create their own food gardens and be able to go out and share that as well. And for them to be able to create food sustainability for themselves is a really, really big part of our mission as well.
So that's one of the, one of the missions is creating a self-sustainable orphanage. So can you elaborate on that? To me, that means that you're able to grow all the food you need on site.
Yep. So we have, right now, we have 2.5 acres, and it's designed by Warren Brush, who is one of the permaculture gurus of the world. And the property itself on the 2.5 acres is looking to be about 80% food sustainable. We were just given the property next door to use as an agriculture site. And basically, it's to grow our own food, but it's to be used as a teaching site. So they're asking us if they can bring in farmers from other parts of Ethiopia to learn permaculture in exchange for teaching. Then we can grow our own food there. So that should be enough not only for the orphanage, but also to share with the local community. And we're toying with different ideas of food co-ops and, you know, how to create that fully self-sustaining piece.
So the types of food you grow there, I assume that it's not necessarily, you know, what we see in the U.S., corn and beans and type. Are there types of food that are specific to that part of the world?
Well, teff is huge there.
What is that?
It's called teff, and it's a grain that is indigenous in Ethiopia. I think it's only grown. It's now they're growing it in other places, but it's only from Ethiopia. And that's how they make their staple food, injera, which is a pancake type food that you use instead of a knife and fork. And it's actually really high in protein and really high in calcium. It's a good grain. So we grow teff. And then there's, you know, papayas and mangoes and avocados and bananas.
Different types of food than we have here.
Yeah.
But so where are you getting the folks with the knowledge to execute that kind of
Well, Warren is
techniques?
Warren's American, but he's been 20 years helping put, you know, spread the word about permaculture and teach permaculture in Africa. And then we also have on the ground one young man, Terefe, who is licensed in permaculture, knows a fair amount about it. His brother runs the only permaculture program in Ethiopia. He's terrific, and he just absorbs everything Warren says in such a beautiful way. And then we have Atiso, an older gentleman who used to work for the Agriculture Bureau, and he knows everything about seeds and what grows in the soil and all of that. And so between those two guys living there full time and then Warren coming in a couple times a year, that's how we manage it.
I want to remind our listeners that this is the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show. I'm the host, Chris Bessler. I'm here in the morning, here in the studio with Jennifer Phil Crooks and Sarah Clintworth from Murati's Village. I think we should throw out a way for people to contact you. You have a website?
Yeah, our website is www.uriadisvillage.org, and that's U-R-Y-A-D-I-S, village, all one word, .org. And then there's also email, and we have Facebook. If you just Google, look up Uriadis Village on Facebook or Google.
And you got a lot of information there about what your mission is and what the orphanage is about.
We do, and we have videos. Scott Rulander, who's a great local videographer, has done our videos for us. He's been over with us a couple of times. And so also on YouTube, if you put Uriadis Village in, all Scott's videos are on YouTube.
Yeah, so people can really see what's going on there.
Yeah.
And there is a donate button. So people...
Gotta have those buttons.
So if you're interested in listening and you want to support, that's one way you can go and support. You also have the event coming up next Wednesday, November 30th. It's the Sippin' Shop at the Pondere Winery from 4 to 7 p.m. And How does the government interface with Euratis Village, the Ethiopian government?
Government's been really supportive. They've made a huge push for food security in Ethiopia, and so they're really excited about the permaculture piece and about the fact that we're hoping to work with local farmers and teach and share and also learn from them. I mean, there's so much to be learned in Ethiopia as well. It's really a trade of information. The local Ministry of Women's Affairs, who are in charge of the orphan situation in our area, are also very, very welcoming to us and to our project, and really happy with the government relations. Actually, the mayor is the one who just gave us the land next door.
Is there government support to be had? Because it's a they run on a real shoestring compared to
the support is the free land. I mean, to just be given 5 acres is a pretty cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also the building the relationships there. It's doing any kind of business in Ethiopia is we're really accustomed over here to having like a very linear, like you start with step 1, 2, 3, 4, and it's all laid out, and there are no like really not a lot of questions about how you go from point A to point B. And over there, it's not quite that way.
It takes a little more circuitous.
And you kind of go, two or three steps down and realize, oh, we missed something really crucial back at step one, because it can be really difficult. There's not really like a good centralized way to find out how you need to do things.
A lot of trial and error.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's challenging, but it's also really, in doing it that way, you build these personal connections with people, because it then becomes about knowing the right people to a certain extent and knowing who's going to be able to give you the correct information, as opposed to just being able to like look at a pamphlet or a,
And so how has the orphanage been received by the people of the local town there, Sodo?
Well, it's really a part of our mission as well for Wolaita Village, which is the name of the village that we're building, to be able to give back to the local community. So a lot of the crew that's working there are local guys who, didn't have jobs and they're employed now. We're growing enough food already to share with our local community. We're doing a big...
Which is so exciting.
It is. I know. It is. Like, it's really cool. It is really neat. We're sharing with all of our neighbors. We're doing a Christmas... I'm going to be over there for Christmas, and so we're doing a Christmas feast, and all the neighbors will come for that, and we'll actually be giving grains away to the local handicapped and homeless population. So we're really trying to give back to the community, because ultimately this is going to be their project. We're going to work ourselves out of this job, but ultimately it's them who are going to care for this village and for the orphans living in the village, and so the community relations are so important.
That I assume is pretty long-term idea.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. It's not happening anytime soon, but eventually.
I just want to add something else to that whole local community piece, that this has been kind of a recent development, like in the last 4 or 5 months, that we've started working with local agencies that promote local adoption of the kids. Some international adoption out of Ethiopia has they've really put kind of a stop, not a complete stop, but they've really cut that down because there was a lot of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the
kids getting into bad situations.
Well, and like just some unpleasant monetary things going on.
Kids being sold, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of difficult to say, like, this is exactly what was happening. But it was to the point where the government was like, no more of this. But part of the way they've chosen to try to deal with all these children that need homes is to start promoting local adoption, which of course we were pretty excited about, because that not only allows the children to stay in their own community, but it helps them stay in their own culture, stay in a place that's going to be a little more familiar to them. And we've started building a pretty strong partnership with the Ministry of Women's Affairs to help train the parents, because adopting kids is, it's not an easy thing to do necessarily. It takes a little bit of education and understanding about that whole process, and so that's something we're also really excited about, to be able to offer help in so many different ways, to not only say here we'll take these children in, but also like if possible we'll help them stay in their local community and find families that want to take care of them there.
And how big is Sodo?
Population's about 150,000, but it's about the size of Sandpoint. So it's
you mean the commercial center is kind of the size of Sandpoint, but there's just a lot of people living
there. There's a lot of people living
there. So how, this is a very depressed area. How what's the main source of livelihood for all those people? It is. So people are growing things on very small plots because they're...
And on depleted soil, you know, that's a big problem in Ethiopia is the soil's just so depleted. And that's one of the exciting things about permaculture is it really focuses on nourishing the soil so the soil can grow continuously year round instead of, you know, once a year and then 3 years off.
Right.
And so it's, that's why there's so much starvation. I mean, Soto is, it's a hard place to live.
And the kids at the orphanage, do they go to the public school or do you have schooling just for the kids on
they
the orphanage?
They do. Our kids, most of our older kids have special needs. We're the only facility that takes special needs kids in the area. And so we have some kids who are deaf. We have a couple of kids who are cognitively impaired. And for those kids, we try to do an individualized education program. And then they also go to the public school.
And what's a public school like in Ethiopia?
You know, it's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like an overcrowded public school here. But the teachers, for the kids who are invested, they actually can get a decent education. For the kids that don't want to stay in the classroom, there's nobody forcing them to do so. So it kind of goes back to the kids and the families and how much they want the education.
Mm-hmm. We're also fortunate that we're able to have a tutor who, because some of our children, you know, were maybe delayed in getting into school or staying in school. And so we have a young lady that actually works with them. She goes to school with them, helps them with their homework and just kind of.
And she's Ethiopian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the language there is English?
Nope.
No.
Amharic is the national language, okay. But there's 81 local languages as well in the country. So in our area, they speak Wolitinya and Amharic.
Is English very well used by the population there?
It's taught in all the schools. So, you know, anybody who's finished school can speak some basic English. But, you know, in the service industry, the restaurants, there's a little bit of English. But our area, there's not a lot of English speaking. Mm. And we're struggling to learn Wolitinya.
Yeah, we should get some lessons set up this time we're open.
Well, I work with the kids. I teach them. I go counting 1 through 10 in English, and then they have me go through it in Amharic and in Wolitinya, which is totally unfair that I have to do it two different languages.
Okay, you have to lay a little bit of it on us. Say something.
I could count, which is on hulet sost, amis, adis, sabat.
Okay.
That's about as far as I can get. They would be not impressed. Yeah. Well, I could get to 20. And Amasiganalo is thank you.
Salam is how you would greet someone in Amharic. That's a really pretty generally accepted.
And the best word, my kid's favorite word, is shintabit, which means bathroom.
An important word in any language, right?
Yeah.
So again, you're having a sip and shop event next Wednesday, November 30th at the Ponderay Winery from 4 to 7 p.m. That'll support Euradi's Village. Any words to wrap things up here, Sarah or Jennifer?
We just really would love to meet and greet as many people as we can there. We just are excited to share what we're doing and to be able to provide it in such a way where it's fun for everybody. And we also want to say a huge thank you to the folks at the Ponderay Winery. For doing something like that. It makes it really easy for nonprofits. It's a lovely location, and we're just happy to be able to be there.
And also, you know, when people come out and talk to us, any ideas anybody has, we're a young nonprofit. We're still learning and growing, and, you know, to have a nurse practitioner and a PT and an OT have volunteered just in the last month to come over and teach our staff, that's not necessarily something I would have thought of. And, you know, they came and offered, and I thought, well, it's exactly what we need because there is no physical therapy in Soto. And so if anybody has any ideas or has skills that they would be interested in donating and teaching us, you know, we'd love to talk about that too.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you again for coming in.
Thank you.
Jennifer, Phil Crooks, and Sarah Clintworth with Euradi's Village. And people can look up more information at euradisvillage.org. And that's going to wrap it for our morning show this morning. We're going to go out with another song by the Shook Twins, who are playing here Saturday at the Panda Theater. This is their comparatively recent song by them called A While. Thanks for listening. Have a great Thanksgiving.
I'm excited for the
song's called A While.